What's the game-changing realization that helped you build a high-performing team? That question is at the center of every episode of the HR Impact Show. Every HR professional wants to build a team that has empowered managers, engaged employees, and an organization that's striving to become elite. The challenge is that you're often told to do more with less. We're going to fix that. Every week, we will feature executive and senior HR leaders from across the country, and they will share with us their actionable insights and best practices that's going to help empower you to create an engaged, elite workforce. Here's the show. Thanks for joining us today on the HR Impact Show. This is your friendly neighborhood town strategy nerd, Dr. Jim. Scaling up, then scaling down, and then spinning off sounds like a complicated yo-yo trick. Executing all three of those things and not creating chaos in your organization is an even more complex, quote-unquote, trick to pull off. Employees can feel unmoored during all of these changes, so how can you as a leader make the case for those people to stay with your organization? How do you adjust from a resource-rich global monolith to a nimble startup? Sounds impossible, right? It's a good thing that we have Kylie Stair joining the HR Impact community to share her story of how she pulled this off. So what's Kylie's story anyways? So Kylie is the chief people officer at Litmos, where she is dedicated to driving business success by building highly engaged, inclusive, empowered teams. In her role, Kylie oversees the global HR organization and is responsible for all aspects of the company's people strategy, including talent acquisition, learning and development, compensation, benefits, DEIB, organizational design, employee relations, and a partridge in a pear tree. So before joining Litmos, Kylie served as a human resources senior director working with SAP's chief learning officer and chief diversity and inclusion officer. She strategically developed and executed a comprehensive people strategy for over 2,000 employees worldwide, resulting in diverse, high-performing and engaged organizations that consistently achieve business goals. So TLDR, she's a big deal. Kylie, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm super pumped to have you on the show. And not to turn this into an infomercial, but for the listeners, but wait, there's more because we have more of Kylie's story to get into. So I think the first order of business, Kylie, is for you to share with us anything else that we didn't cover in your bio that you feel the listeners are going to want to know about you that can inform this conversation that we're going to have.
Obviously, I have been in, as you mentioned, Jim, some small organizations and very big organizations, global organizations headquartered in the U.S., those headquartered in Germany. I have been an individual contributor. I have been a manager of managers, and I've worked in a couple different industries, retail, and most of my time is spent in the tech industry. So I've seen a couple things, gone through a couple of changes in my tenure at various companies, and happy to connect with you today and chat through some of it.
So one of the things that I'm curious about in terms of your career trajectory, you've worked in a lot of different industries and a lot of different sized organizations. I guess if you're going to draw a contrast between size of organization or even industry to industry, what were the things that most stood out as you went through that career trajectory, especially from a people strategy perspective?
Yeah, I started early in my career working in retail and going through for big corporations in the U.S. and going through very robust, structured leadership development programs, resourcing from an HR perspective, and really just implementing at that point in time and executing on someone else's strategy that kind of came from headquarters on out into a very small organization, Zulily, which was for me a quite big change around being with a much smaller headquartered HR team that was in Seattle and trying to create and build, which was difficult to do when you hadn't done it, when I hadn't done it before, coming from an execution type organization prior into kind of what I'd say then a mid-size organization at Concur of building and kind of flexible, but yet some structure into a massive organization of SAP in the tech world. And really at this place, starting to create the strategy myself. And implementing it and executing on it as well through my team or others. And then back into a small but mighty organization of Litmos and taking a lot of those learnings along the way into the role I'm in today. Again, starting off really in execution mode of executing someone else's strategy. And I realized that's not necessarily what I want to do in the long term. And so being fairly thoughtful then about what types of companies and roles I wanted to be in going forward.
You spent some time in retail, both in large and small organizations. Is there anything about that time in retail, executing people strategy, that you feel prepared you well for being on the people strategy side at a large global tech company like SAP?
Yeah, there are so many great lessons that I personally can take from every company that I've worked for. I personally think quite fortunate in the companies that I have been able to spend some time in and the people that I've been able to connect with in those companies as well. The retail and the organization, Target at the time, had some phenomenal, what I consider, leadership development programs that I went through myself, and top talent programs as well. And those were really a eye-opening kind of baseline for what great could look like at other organizations. Again, not necessarily the same resourcing or other types of needs in certain areas, but a leader is a leader. Right? And being able to take some of what you learned from this organization and say, what worked well? Now, what maybe could we do at this organization a little bit differently that fits our needs? And just iterating as you go. So I constantly think to myself, I take something from every organization I've been in as a great learning in how I can continue to build my own library of resourcing in my own head, and what I can take to others as well.
One of the things that I find interesting about that transition is that oftentimes when people find a sector and they spend a fair amount of time in that sector, they tend to stick around in that sector. Mm-hmm. You've had a long stint in retail, and then you've had an even longer stint in big tech. What drove your move from switching from retail to big tech?
Honestly, I was getting fairly burned out in retail. Retail is, in full transparency, working weekends, working nights, working at that stage in my life. It was something that I was really committed to for years. And then it wasn't working for me anymore. And so taking a step back, regrounding myself when I left Target, to reground myself, I got my degree in HR. I started my work with Target in HR, eventually moved into a couple different types of management roles within Target as well, and really wanted to get back to my HR roots, I'll say. And so took some time off with them and really started to double down on a search of getting back into HR generalist, HR business, whatever, like some sort of HR role that I felt at a smaller organization. That was actually intentional to spend some time for me looking into that. I didn't necessarily look at the industry outside of, I'm not going to do retail again for a minute. Let me take a break from that and see what else is out there. I was living in Seattle at the time. There's plenty of opportunity in Seattle for your choice of whatever type of industry you want to go in. And so that's when I made the transition into Zulily.
Got it. The other thing that I was curious about when we look at that period of time in your career, you know, when you think about your time in retail and you apply some of the things into big tech, what can big tech, from a people strategy perspective, learn from what worked really well in retail?
Go back to the leadership development, because a leader is a leader. And they did this very well. That resonates in any industry. How to manage people, how to be great at giving feedback. You can take that anywhere. And if you have created a great program at any organization you're in, that resonates really no matter the industry. Now, Target was a US-centric organization, very much just US-based. And so I learned a lot more about cultural awareness when I moved to Concur, in that what became a global organization, managers I'm interacting with in other countries, and now understanding the nuances of how to manage to lead global teams in various countries with various cultures, and how to support other people doing that as well. And so that was definitely a switch, but you take that baseline and it resonates really globally and across any industry, I'd say.
I appreciate you laying out that context, Kylie. I think one of the things that I'm curious about, especially with your experience in multiple industries and multiple paces that you've been involved with, what's the leadership myth or HR myth that you just wish would go away that keeps coming up even today?
For me, I feel like I get time and again from managers and other leaders that if there is something not going quite right with employee engagement, that HR has to fix it. It is HR's problem. And I am fully aware that there is a lot that sits in our purview within these roles around creating programs and surveying and processes to help drive strong employee engagement, coaching managers, helping employees, having great policies in place. But when you get down to the day to day. You get down to the nitty gritty of what people are experiencing in their day to day. HR is not there in that. The manager is, the team is, the collaboration you build amongst each other. And so I think the thing that gets me is, oh, if engagement is bad or there's something wrong with the culture, HR, you have to fix it. When everyone owns it, everyone fixes it together, and you can collectively drive it forward. And maybe HR can help with the strategy to start moving it in the right direction, but it comes down to every person. It is not on just HR to fix.
So I'm about to get into a what grinds my gears segment on this show with your response. So I really like that you call that out, but I want to dig in a little bit more. That happens so often, and I hear it from so many HR leaders, that whenever there's a people-related or people strategy issue, oh, that's an HR thing, go ahead and figure that out. That's your job. And what's interesting to me is when you look at the major reasons why somebody will leave an organization, two out of the top five are related to their relationship with their immediate manager. So the thing that I'm wondering is, why is there such a resistance from managers to take more ownership of their reports, the relationships with their reports, the kind of environment that they're building? Why is this reflexive behavior of pushing it onto HR? Why does that exist? What's your lens on
that? Yeah. Sometimes I think it's experience, very much depends on a level of role, but sometimes it doesn't depend on the level of management role. And I think that people get so sometimes caught up in their own functional area or their own business or their own, what they think they own, that this is just not an intentional top of mind topic for them, because you do have to put intentional work into building great teams. It doesn't just happen. You need to commit time with your employees. You should be having one-on-ones. You should be having skip levels. You should be having town hall. You should be communicating and connecting with people on a regular basis. You should be as transparent as possible. Help connect people to others. And that takes time. And it takes energy. And sometimes it takes emotional energy. And so sometimes if things aren't going well, it can, in my mind anyway, be easier to say, someone else needs to help fix that. And I think that's where HR really can come in and help coach and guide and support and teach and really build in and implement and support processes with leaders. But it's not something that just happens. It has to be an intentional action.
So I love how you use the word intentionality or a lack of intentionality on the part of some managers. And I think there's an interesting theory that I'm working out when it comes to your comment that managers need to be intentional about these things. My theory is that managers are spending most of their time firefighting because they're not being intentional. So it creates this sort of loop of constantly being in that firefighting mode. What's your best advice for those leaders and managers who find themselves constantly firefighting and want to get out of that sort of hamster wheel that they're stuck in?
One thing I would say is be very intentional during your onboarding when you're hiring someone new. I know it takes time to onboard someone, and it actually can take more energy and time. Maybe you were doing that person's role because you needed a backfill, and or they were in says, yay, your person's on board. You probably have so much time, but you shouldn't for a little while, because you should be onboarding them and teaching and training and being in there with it. And that's going to take time, but it's going to pay off in the long run. It's going to help set this person up from day one for success. I think also sometimes there could be delegation can be an issue as well. A lot of executors that I see anyway, and myself included, just want to get it done. Just want to get it done. Let me do it. Let me handle it. And so how are we delegating? How are we helping to empower our employees to take on some of these challenges and be involved in some of this so they can continue to contribute even more? It's not about just, it's me, I'm doing it. I'm very much personally the mindset of it is a team achievement. Kylie didn't do really half of this. It was really all of us collectively coming together to do it.
So I really like how you mentioned the delegation point. And I think that's a consistent weakness among a lot of managers, a lot of leaders, is that they know that they can get it done faster. So they just dive right into the fray. And I think one of the key things that I want to call out in terms of how powerful delegation can be, we always talk about how do we grow our people. One of the most underrated ways that you can grow the capability of your people is to delegate things down and give them those hidden stretch opportunities. Because if you're creating space for yourself and allowing them to take some of the tactical and execution load off of you, you're building a better team.
Just to keep going on that theme, for me also, and I just recently did this with my team a couple of weeks ago, so it's very top of mind, but going through from a development perspective with the organization, what motivates you, right? It's important to understand your team, because some tasks that you actually might not be motivating to you could be motivating to someone else in your organization. And maybe they do want to take that on. I think about an example of HR ops and analytics, maybe not necessarily something that motivates me, but by all means, it motivates someone else on my team. And that's important for me to know when we think about delegation. We think about where they thrive, where they, you know, get energy and where we can have them spend some of their time in those areas. And when I think about just leadership overall, really getting to know your people just helps in the long run around also that delegation.
Wow, it's been a great conversation so far. Make sure you join the HR Impact Community, where we gather a community of HR leaders just like you. This is a space where top people leaders share actionable insights and practical playbooks. Sign up today as a member for the community. Get updates on the latest HR resources and exclusive event invites. You can join the community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. And now, back to the show. I really like the point that you made there, because it's it reminded me of a conversation that we had with Damar Phillips, who is the former VP of People at Hylion. And one of the things that he mentioned from a people strategy perspective is that he's very intentional, and he coaches all of his leaders within his organization to be very intentional about understanding the strengths of the people that roll into you. That way you can deploy resources and tasks and assignments and whatnot that play to everybody's strengths versus taking on those things that might be drudgery for you. So real good stuff. I opened the conversation when we're talking about scaling up, scaling down, and then spinning off. In some respects, it sounds probably the prelude to The Hobbit there and back again. But that's not really what this story is about. So tell us about what that process taught you that really allowed you to build some high performing team.
Yeah. And just to be clear on the process as well, the kind of journey that I've been on here is when I started my career at Concur at the time, it was just acquired by SAP. So I was not intentionally joining a large organization as SAP, joining Concur, who had just been acquired a few months prior to that by SAP and going through the acquisition process. And so I got to experience over 4 or 5 years there of integrating into a bigger organization, going through this process. What does that mean to start creating synergies amongst teams and functions? And so then transitioning into SAP, into a senior director role, as you mentioned, working alongside some really very smart, very insightful leaders as well in the side of the house. And then getting and dabbling my toes, getting a chance to dabble in M&A with us and really starting to focus on the divestiture process. There's always, you talk about acquisitions, but divesting is also an interesting story when you think about what that can mean from a process perspective, a people perspective as well. And so I was part of this divestiture process with Lipmos that had been announced and really came in just to support the change management of the transition of Lipmos, those who had been identified to transition out into a standalone organization now being backed by a PE firm. And originally, it was not intentional to go with Lipmos in be their head of HR. But through the process and connecting with the team and recognizing, I also made a very intentional career choice to do this, to continue to grow and learn. And it made sense. And so moved into the role full time as the chief people officer as they became an organization. So lots of change that had happened coming into smaller tech, big tech, and then out into small tech again. So really the change that I went through personally really helped to establish a baseline of how I wanted to bring in the intention while bringing this team through change, helping them be part of the process, not just going along for a ride. Right. And being part of the voice around who are we going to be as an organization. One of the things that was really important to me starting off, and again, I had the benefit of still being at SAP on the transition out with Lipmos, was setting up when they were still part of SAP, change into a change ambassador network. And the change ambassador network was anyone who was interested in raising their hand to help be part of small groups, to connect with me, connect with the other leaders, to share feedback around what they're hearing, what's going well, where they need more communication, where we need to dive. And it was so insightful and honestly energizing to see that even if people didn't work in the HR realm or didn't work in like a people role, raising their hand to help build the culture of the organization, because they recognize that they have the ability to impact that from day zero, really. And one of the biggest work streams that came out of setting up that network was creating our own Litmos values. And so I recognized obviously very early on that we would not be taking SAP's values into Litmos. And I also knew we were going to be hiring some more people in Litmos coming out. So we're going to have a lot of very tenured people who had worked on the Litmos product for a very long time on this journey, and then brand new people coming in, and who are we? And so we went through an exercise where I wanted to be a very interactive in kind of bottoms up exercise. And so surveyed all of our employees at the time, did actually small group feedback sessions, listening sessions with them as well. And what behaviors do we want to exhibit at Litmos? What do we stand for? When someone looks up on our website, what are they going to see about us? How do we want to recognize each other? How do we want to look at hiring against these values? And it was really exciting to see all the energy and excitement in it. And we were able to launch our new values just a couple of weeks after going live. And you can see them on our website and everything as well. But it's just a prime example of the fact that people who are hungry to be part of something will contribute and want to.
There's a lot there to unpack. So I'm going to break this down into a few different pieces. So when I hear about that trajectory, you started out at Concur, then became part of it. And then a period of time passes and then you get spun off into Litmos. So when I'm thinking about the employee life cycle there, so if I'm part of Concur, it's a high velocity tech organization. And then word gets out that we're going to get acquired by SAP. So I freak out at that point. So am I going to have a job? Then I'm at SAP and get used to the SAP world. There's a big difference in terms of total comp in a startup environment versus total comp in a global monolith. So I made it through. I feel pretty good. Then we hear about a divestiture where we're going back to a smaller organization. And here I am as an employee sitting there thinking, oh, crap, am I going to have a job? So when you look at sort of those big swings within the employee population, you did a lot of work in terms of getting feedback and making sure that you're actioning through it. There's no getting around the stark difference between working at SAP and working at a startup. So when you look at that, how did you thread that needle and not really have a mass exodus of people when Litmos ended up getting spun off?
And I think we have a very unique situation here with Litmos, because as I mentioned earlier, most of the individuals who were identified to go in the spinoff and were communicated with were in organizations and roles that had been working on this product, this Litmos product for years. They have very long tenure. And they were dedicated and committed to this product and what they had been building for a while anyway. So there was this really an underlying energy and current of kind of excitement of, oh, to go back to a smaller, nimble size, to go back to maybe the size of an organization where my voice is going to be heard. It's just to have access to senior leadership, to CEO or whomever, to share your ideas on an open kind of forum and everyone can see them. There's just constraints when you're in a big organization around how quickly you move, how quickly decisions are being made, and just some complexity that comes with that when you're a big organization. Being small, there was really that groundwork already laid in the sense that most of the individuals had come from that environment previously, many years ago, but had come from it. And we're interested in getting back to that. Now, we had to do a lot of hiring, as I mentioned, and build a lot more organizations. The HR organization is a prime example. There is no HR team that left and went to Litmos. Had to build it from the ground up. Finance and all of our operations and all of our systems and everything came with that. Obviously, there is, when you're at a big organization, there's just different types of resourcing. There's different, like you mentioned it, when it comes to compensation, or access to learning and development tools or other things, programs, things that just big companies really can implement. It's different. It's different at a small company. But as mentioned, doubling down on the benefits of what you get to be part of and build together at Litmos is the exciting thing. And one of the components, I think, that in, as mentioned, taking, helping people through the change with sharing information, helping them along the journey, helping them see, like, we are going to establish goals for the year and we're going to have X, Y, Z that we have to do. We're all going to learn together. And that's exciting. And that's exciting. So yes, there's the comp side from a retention perspective and things that you have to intentionally think about regardless when you're in an HR role when it comes to total rewards that you need to think through and implement. Outside of that, I think it's being very transparent about your goals and your priorities and how this person in this role can be successful at Litmos.
You mentioned earlier one of the things that you did and it happened, it went live pretty much when Litmos was officially spun off, and that was the definition of values and what's going to drive us forward. And that was built through a high degree of collaboration across all of the people that were going to be part of Litmos. I know that there's no way to quantify this, but what impact do you think that exercise had on getting the people that went from SAP to Litmos to be fully bought in versus being a little nervous about such a drastic change?
Yeah, I agree about quantifying, but I think one, it just started to break down silos and barriers. So we have, the company is in, at this point in time, 4 different countries. People were connecting with each other and they had never talked to each other in the past. They were just working in their little silos in the organization or whatever. And so being part of those cross-functional teams really just helped to build awareness around who else is even in this organization. What else do you do? I didn't even know we had XYZ role. And some of that happens when you move into big companies, right? And so coming back together and starting to break those silos down by going through an exercise like that, you could see people start to network with each other and reach out to each other. I felt personally that I had access to a lot of people to ask questions and stay up to date around what's really the pulse of what's going on here in, let's say, Australia, or what's happening with the team really in the UK, and having that connect in. And so for me, just to see a little bit of that energy of getting to know who else is going on this journey with me and getting this information together, being part of this together, helped in my mind to drive a little bit of that, I want to see how this plays out. Let me see where we're going together.
Great stuff. So we covered a lot of ground. And I think one of the things that we haven't got to yet is the how. So we've talked about why certain things need to be done when you're navigating some pretty drastic change. We talked about what are the things that you need to be doing. If there's a leader that's listening to this conversation and they want to build sort of a roadmap on how to execute these sort of changes, what are the key principles that they need to keep in mind from your experience that will help them do this successfully?
It comes back to, again, intentionality. Having a plan on a page or in some way, shape, or form around what you're trying to accomplish and what are some factors that go into that. So for example, communication, as we know, is a really big component of change management. And so being very intentional about what sorts of communication am I going to have with my leaders, with my employees, how often, what channels. And so really putting intention behind the plan that you need to really help everyone get through. And then are you communicating the right thing at the right time? Sometimes we can't communicate certain topics at the right time for people, but being transparent and sharing that is important as well. I can't tell you, or I don't have an answer at this point in time. When I do, I will be able to let you know. And being as transparent as possible through the process, it just shows and demonstrates to people that you're helping to build that trust with them as well. So for me, be intentional about it. Do not underestimate the value of a strong communications plan. And really, truly have a plan. Don't wing it.
Real good stuff. Kylie, if people want to continue the conversation, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Happy to connect on LinkedIn. Now you can find me at Kylie Starr.
And that's K-Y-I-L-E. So it's not spelled the way that you think it should be spelled.
Yes,
I just want to say that out loud. So real good stuff. I appreciate you hanging out with us, Kylie. When I think about this conversation, there's one big thing that I think stood out to me that a lot of the listeners would be well served paying attention to. And it was when you took us through the part of that journey where you're co-collaborating and building that shared set of values, that mission. I think that's an underrated part of that journey. And here's why. A lot of people will discount the value of mission, vision, values as a way forward. But if you're looking at answering the question, how do you navigate through drastic change? That should be your North Star. And I think that was one of the things that stood out about this conversation. If you're a people leader and you want to build a shared vision for success and a shared view of a better future, you better marshal your troops and better marshal your people to have their input into it too. Because if you're only doing it from a top-down perspective, you're going to have a lot of people that aren't bought into your vision for success. And I think that was the one aspect of the story that I really enjoyed hearing about. So for those of you who have listened to this conversation, thanks for tuning in. If you want more conversations like this, make sure you join the HR Impact community. You can find that at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact and tune in every week where we'll have another leader joining us and sharing with us the game-changing insights that help them build a high-performing team. Thanks for listening to this episode of the HR Impact Show. We hope you liked the conversation. Don't forget to continue supporting us by joining the HR Impact community. You can find the community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. Tune in next time where we'll have another guest who's going to share with us the game-changing insights that help them build high-performing teams.